Okay, I guess we're about ready to go. During the break, we found out that internet access was failing, at least for the guest connection. So if you're having trouble with your internet connection, you're not the only one. Hopefully, maybe sometime during the rest of today's lecture, that'll get fixed. So did anybody take a look outside? Is it still snowing, or is it finally stopped out there? Cool. So hopefully, I know I saw the road cleaning staff all out there shoveling and everything, so hopefully at least the local epic area will be clear, and we'll see what the rest of the city and towns are like. So what I want to do now is continue on in these patterns, and then I'll walk you through the actual definitions you'll have to deal with so you know pretty much what you're up against. Some of the definitions are trivial. And that's cool in the sense that as the very first step of doing Project 2, my recommendation is do the easy ones. Just got to do them anyway, and it'll get your feet wet and get you a little experience. And then we'll move on to the more complex ones, which may take a little time and experimentation to get just right. So anyway, we are talking here about the notation, and one last thing is you can use a superscript with a fixed number to represent exactly a certain number of repetitions. It's something you don't use all the time, but it's a nice addition. So what I wanted to do is give you some examples. Some come right out of our assignment. Others are related to other languages, but still issues that might come up in scanning. So one of the things we have, and you'll have to do, is a single line comment. And these have become fairly standard now. They are started with a double slash. Notice that, by the way, means the scanner must automatically distinguish between a single slash and two slashes, which aren't two single slashes, that is, divide operators, adjacent, but rather the beginning of a comment. So this is just an example, as I mentioned earlier, that different definitions can overlap, and it's not up to you, but up to the scanner to decide, using some very basic rules, which definition applies. And the rules we have will essentially be the longest match always wins. And in case of ties, the earlier earlier definition wins. So like the old days when you would mail a box top into a contest, earliest postmark wins. And I never had the earliest postmark because I never won. So here's an example of something that uses the not, uses repetition, and uses some special characters. So here's a situation where, how do we define a single line comment to our scanner? Well, it says it begins with a couple of slashes. I don't have to quote those or anything. It's smart enough to say this does not mean two consecutive divide operators. Rather, it means the double slash a comment beginner. What's the definition of a single line comment? Well, our definition is real simple, and it also answers some questions which you may have had or maybe would have had difficulty answering, but now not. Namely, it's anything up to, including, the end of line that ends a line. Typically, when we type a text, each line is terminated by an end of line character. As we found earlier, in some cases on DOS or something, it can be a carriage return, but some symbol that says, I'm the end of this logical line, go on to the next. So it ends with an end of line, and it says, what is the text? Well, rather than saying what can be there, it's easier to say what can't be there, namely an end of line. I cannot allow an end of line to be within the comment body of something terminated by an end of line. If I did that, what would go wrong? It would turn out I'd have a single line comment that would eat the rest of your program up to the last end of line. Because remember I said the longest match works. So if this thing were allowed to contain ends of line, it would say just eat, eat, eat. So it's like Godzilla, you know, just going in there and eating all whatever town Godzilla attacks up till the end of it. So our definition, and we'll have just this definition, is anything that's not an end of line. Well, why do we have the star there? Well, it answers a question you may not have asked, but I can now answer. Namely, are we allowed to have an empty comment? I don't know why I would want one, but why should I disallow it? So can I say slash slash and then terminate the line? And the answer is yes. You can put anything you want in the comment. It's up to you. Notice it even allows unprintables in a comment. Why would that be the case? I said all kinds of bad things about how terrible unprintables were if they weren't escaped. Why would I not have to want to or care to bother with having unprintables escaped in a comment? That's right, because comments, as we'll see, will be deleted by the scanner, that they're only for human readership. If you want to confuse human readership by doing all kind of wild and crazy things, you can go ahead and do it. It's up to you. It's probably a bad comment, but as the gentleman suggested, it's not going to change the meaning of a program, so we'll allow it. You're adults now, and you know, having bad comments is one of the things adults are allowed to do. Not one of the most interesting, but still you can do it. So that's our definition there. Oh, by the way, there's one case that we'll have to worry about, and we'll do this in error situation. I'll kind of get ahead of myself. What would happen if I happen to have a comment as the very last thing in a program file? It turns out that I said lines are always terminated by end of line, and that is usually, but not 100% true. It's conceivable that the very last line in a program might not have an end of line. Notice, in a sense, it's not really needed, because when I hit the end of everything, that implies the end of line. So we'll have to worry about, in an error situation, how this thing could be modified. Turns out not as hard as you might imagine to handle a situation where the very last line is a comment, and for some crazy reason, there's not an end of line there. After all, you can't see them, so you can't really be sure they're there. Other ends of line you implicitly see by the fact that when you print it out, the next line is on a new physical line on your output medium. So we're getting ahead of ourselves on that, but it's an issue which will come up. Here's some other ones that might come in handy, namely, some languages allow fixed decimal notation. That is digits, decimal point, digits. And how do we write that down there? Well, typically, we want to follow something called scientific notation, which means that you have a digit on either side of the decimal point. That makes numbers more readable and avoids some ambiguity with dots being used for other purposes. Remember, dot can be used in a language like Java as a field selector. So you want to be a little careful about dots that are exposed. In this particular case, I could then have something like 12.34. And this would match by saying I can have one or more digits. Remember, D represents a digit, an explicit decimal point. I might need to escape that. We'll talk about that later. But I mean, in this case, the real decimal point, and then extra digits. It does not allow this, nor does it allow that. Well, here's a case where I say, well, what suppose I really want to allow those? There are ways of doing it, and I'll get to a correct example later, but I might be tempted to say, which says, no, you don't have to have decimal digits to the left of decimal point, or you don't need decimal digits to the right of the decimal point. What's wrong with that definition? It allows just a single decimal point, which I think very few people would argue is really a number. It's hard to imagine something with a number without digits in it. So sometimes too succinct a definition gives you not quite what you want. So for our purposes right now, we have digits on either side of the decimal point. I'll show you a little later how you can get it in the case where missing digits on the left with digits on the right, or missing digits on the right with digits on the left, both will be accepted, but a bare decimal point will not be accepted. So just to make sure we do things right. And down here, we can do assigned integer. I actually showed you this one a bit ago. And the question is, why the quotes? Remember, plus can be used as this repetition operator, and I want to make sure that it's not misunderstood. So in that case, I quote that out. Oh, here, we were talking about a double pound sign just a bit ago, and let's go in there. Oh, I forgot to set my timer. Let me do that. So I don't want that either. Sorry. Hold on a minute. There we go. One of the things I learned a while ago, that time passes faster when you're teaching than when you're listening. So I'll be up there and say, oh, an hour's gone already, and it doesn't seem like that. And you say, an hour's gone, it seems like a day. What's going on here? And all that. So we'll get our timing down right here. So anyway, this is a definition we're going to have of a multi-line comment, but not using slash star and star slash. We'll figure that out later, but it's a little trickier than you might first imagine. Why is that? Well, slash star and star slash were invented way back when, before people used regular expressions. And it seemed like a nice combination, and it is. It's simply specifying it precisely and unambiguously is more difficult than some other definitions. So what we're going to simply say is, instead of star slash and star slash star, we're going to use pound sign, because pound sign is an underused symbol. And we'll use two of them so I can have a single pound sign inside my comment. So in this particular case, The way this operates, I brought plenty of clean paper this time. So we're going to say, how do I understand what this silly thing is doing? Well, sometimes it's better to understand the definition outside in rather than inside out. So it's saying on the left and on the far right, it's got to have pound signs, pair of them. What I can't allow inside there are two or more consecutive pound signs, but I do want one. I can't have two or more because that would be misinterpreted as a premature termination of the comment, and then the remainder of the comment might be misscanned as real tokens when it's really meant just to be information for a reader. So it says in here, what am I going to have? Well, it's going to say, I want to allow a pound sign, a single one, but I don't want to require it. So oftentimes you'll see this combination. It says I can have it or not, but just one of them. So it says I can have a pound sign or a lambda followed by anything that's not a pound sign. And this thing hole can repeat it zero or more times. Well, this looks a little complex, but actually it's a little more subtle than you might imagine. So this has to allow all the good combinations, but disallow the bad ones. So it has zero, text body can be zero. That means if I want, I can have four pound signs, and that would simply be open and closed. I don't know why I would want it, but it's sensible and it's allowed. So that is allowed. So if you ask the question, is a multi-line comment without anything in its body allowed? The answer is yes. So can I have single pound signs? I might want to have a comment like, we're number one, and everybody does that. And in fact, did you ever notice that it's sort of odd that in computer science departments, typically when you start counting for something like an index or something, you start counting at zero. But I've never ever seen computer science students at a football game saying, we're number zero, we're number zero. But actually, if you think about it, using the way computers work, you usually start counting at zero. In an array, for example, what's the first element of an array? It's the zeroth element, not the first. So it's kind of interesting that MIT, for the first time in a long time, had a good football team this year. And I would be interesting to see the broadcast of the game and see what all these high techies are yelling, we're number zero, we're number zero. Probably not, because it's one of these things that being number one is great, but being number zero is kind of like being the worst. So I guess computer scientists don't yet rule the world. So in this situation, we want to allow one pound sign so I can say something like, we're number one. Okay, how do I do that? Well, you can see the sort of situation. If I put down a pound sign that says I decide to match one, what I can't allow is another pound sign. So how do I do that? I can say after that, you can have anything you want other than a pound sign. Well, suppose I want a comment that has no pound signs at all, which is in its body. That's easy. I have the option of saying pound sign or nothing. I say, give me nothing. And then give me one non-pound sign, followed by another, followed by another, followed by another. So that's going to work. But wait a minute, we have something that looks odd here. And is that right or wrong? Namely, if I want to put down a pound sign as the very last character in my comment body, I can't do it. If I want this to be the very last guy, I have to put down a non-pound sign. And is that a good thing or a bad thing? Well, it's probably a good thing, because if it was a bad thing, I probably wouldn't mention it, because it would make me look foolish. So you can obviously know, if somebody's boasting, you know, it's a positive thing if they're kind of skulking around the situation. Like after the Super Bowl, I know if anybody was rooting for Seattle, you know, I was, oh my gosh, Seattle who? I never heard of Seattle. And because you know Seattle's owned by Paul Allen. And who's Paul Allen? Mr. Microsoft, right after Bill Gates. So either it's good or bad. So you're either rooting for or against Microsoft, so to speak, and that's hard. It actually turns out that's good, because if I could write down a pound sign as my very last character of the comment, notice what it would then do is grab this guy as a second pound sign, terminate me one character prematurely, and this poor guy would be exposed and misscanned as probably an illegal character. Because I think in our language, single pound signs are not used for anything. Double pound signs are, but not single. In a richer language, it might be used as whatever the pound sign operator happens to be in that language. So this is a fairly subtle definition, even for something as simple as this kind of comment. And what I want you at this point to do is start to learn to read these things and be comfortable with them. And as I said, oftentimes reading a definition outside in is an easier way to appreciate what it's trying to say. And in a little while, we'll go to the tokens that CSX has and actually look at them. So we're talking about things that can't be done. It turns out that it's one of these theoretical issues, which I will get back to later, that there are certain patterns that seem to be very reasonable but cannot be written using regular expressions. What happens is we need a richer system, and that's what we'll use when we do our parser. So what you cannot write down, and it's not obvious yet why, is series of matching symbols with the opens and closes, the left and the rights, having exactly the correct count. So it's impossible for me to write down a set that says one set of matching or two or three up to any limit I want. It seems like that ought to be doable, but later on I'll prove it cannot be done in this context. And the reason is I'll assume that if you show me how to do it, I'll show you it fails. It's one of these proofs by contradiction. And why would we care about that? Remember, matching is important. When you have something like square brackets used for subscripts, it's important that those match up. Or if you have square brackets or parens or curly brackets used as subterm delimiters, it's important they match up. And they will be matchable, but not in the context of a scanner. All that means is if we need this to be done, we'll punt it out of the scanner and into the parser, which is a more powerful system. It's also more complex, so we pay the price in that way. So that's just a kind of a heads up for what we'll be getting to. Okay, I've given you the definitions of tokens, and let's actually now go and look at some of those. If you got a copy of that assignment, now is a good idea to grab that back. And what I'll do now is walk you through what it is I'm asking these definitions to do. Yes, sir? A single pound sign, no.
Yeah.
I mean, you're talking about it as a comment or in general? Oh, well, let's go back. Cool. So he says, why is not a single pound sign matched? Is that the question?
So if we had 5 pound signs, is that valid?
No.
But is null within not pound?
Say it again. Null is allowed. That would give you 4 pound signs.
Right, but we can have a pound and then not pound.
You can have a pound sign, but the particular definition says if you put it as the last character of the text of the comment, it cannot be a pound sign.
Sure, but what if you have like pounds and then like lambda and then 2 pounds?
But lambda is not an actual character when you scan. This is talking about what you mean. Lambda is like a ghost. It's invisible, and maybe it's there, but you can never grab it. Okay. What happens here, lambda is, for example, the body, because it can include lambda. But when you match it, you don't ever see a lambda. Lambda is the absence of a match. So as I first start scanning, what have I scanned when I've done nothing at all? I've matched lambda. But nobody defines a token lambda, because there's an infinite number of them out there, and it would serve no purpose. So lambda is really spots where I had an option and I chose not to use it, or I wanted to terminate a long sequence and said, enough is enough. So that's an important point. Lambda is not a character. Characters are always of length 1, lambda is of length 0. So if I don't match a character, I can say I've matched lambda, but I never match a lambda character, because there is no such thing. So say that again without your hand in front of your face.
It's about the null string part of not
count. Yes, it is. I'm sorry, no, not pound, the whole body. No, it's not. And the reason for that, I see. Okay, so yeah, I was answering the wrong question. Sorry about that. Not pound sign is complementation with respect to a character. So not pound sign is any character you want, any one of them other than the pound sign. But it's got to be a character and it's not lambda. And it's kind of rigged that way so that the problems you're kind of alluding to don't nail us. Other questions? Good, we're getting involved in this. And so what I was going to do is go and walk you through these definitions. Now, these are not in order of complexity, so we'll get some hard ones and some easy ones intermixed. It's simply the order in which it seemed to make sense to me to define tokens. But this is, excuse me, after a while, need some lubrication. So let's start out with the fairly simple ones, and I'll explain what it is we want, and then we'll get in later on how you'll actually program this by way of defining patterns. So there's a number of reserved words. You can guess what they mean. Most of them are pretty familiar to people who've done Java or C or C++. But at this stage, they're simply off limits with respect to identifiers. We have this rule that says upper and lowercase are interchangeable. So although I'm spelling these in lowercase, they could also be presented to me in uppercase or mixed case, and they still have to be represented. The argument there is that if I say if, did that sound like it was an uppercase if or a lowercase if? Or maybe mixed case? It's not obvious. In many languages, it's not. I'm told in some languages, you can actually tell by ascending pitch or descending pitch. In Chinese, I'm told that words mean something different if they're kind of ascending or descending pitch. It's like, you did water. You did what? And that can make a difference. Not in English, fortunately. So anyway, that's my motivation, good, bad, or indifferent. I don't know. We have identifiers, and these are things that are not reserved. I write this down by putting the minus reserved, but be careful. Our tool will not have a minus operator. So think of this more as mathematical rather than implementation. We'll have to find an alternative to implement it simply because the tool we have does not provide subtraction. It could, but it's not as needed as you might imagine, and therefore they decided we'll give you the basics, but not just everything. So going back here, and let me get a different pen. What does it say about an identifier? And again, if this is a little on the small side, refer to your paper. So it says, I can have this whole gizmo here, which is extreme way of saying any letter or digits. So 52 plus 10 is 62 different characters. Oh, I'm sorry. No. Let me get ahead of myself. An identifier has got to begin with a letter. So let me do that. So I can have an identifier that begins with a single upper or lowercase letter. And that can be it. So I'm allowed an identifier like I or J or A, any single letter, either case. I can make identifiers longer, and now I can add in letters and digits. So we were talking at the break about CVN-76, which is the Navy designation of an aircraft carrier, the USS Reagan. And it turns out that that would be a valid identifier because you're typically allowed digits at the end or in the middle of an identifier, but not at the beginning. At the beginning, typically they're not allowed. I guess it's misinterpreted as an integer followed by an identifier. So it says after a single letter, you can have additional letters or digits in any combination, in any number, and repeat that to any length you want. You can have a 100-character identifier, 200 characters, whatever. JLEX should handle the bookkeeping of it. We have megabytes and gigabytes and terabytes of memory. It'll probably be the case the TA will try some long identifiers and long integer sequences just to see if it breaks or not. It probably shouldn't, but testing, again, remember, if you're one of these guys who, quality assurance guy, you don't believe anything until you try it. And if you can make it fail, you've made your day. And it's minus reserved. It's just a reminder, if it matches a reserve word also, it's not an identifier. It's anything that looks like an identifier other than reserved words. Integer literals. Interesting, but I've done an odd thing. This is similar to what I showed you before. Namely, I can have a single digit, one or more of them, and an optional sign. But I don't allow a plus sign, a unary plus. It's hardly ever used. And instead of minus sign, I use a twiddle, a tilde, to represent negativity. I'll explain why in future, but some languages have trended in that direction. So it just matter. I think someone is telling me that they were expert in Python. And Python, I believe, is a language that uses a twiddle as part of the name of a negative number rather than minus. What minus is a unary or binary operator. And in many languages, we intermix the two, but it turns out to be a tad problematic. And in fact, since I'm talking about it, I probably ought to explain why. And this, sometimes you learn more about computers and computing than you expected to in this sort of thing. But in many languages, I'm allowed to say minus 17, for example. And the question is, does this mean the positive number 17 negated or minus 17 as a single number? And in many languages, it seems like it doesn't matter. But here's an oddity. In computers, as they're implemented, we have positive numbers and negative numbers. Oh, isn't that a deep statement? But we also have zero. And if you remember your mathematics, zero is neither negative nor positive. It's zero. but in a representation of a number in its binary form, you may have learned, and if not, I'll explain it to you now, the leftmost bit, remember, computer words are made actually of bits. There are 8 bits in a byte and 32 bits in a word, etc. In a negative number representation as 2's complement, the leftmost bit is a 1. If the leftmost bit is a 0, it's either 0, if they're all zeros, or positive. The upshot of that is there's one more negative number that's representable than there is positive numbers. Why? We've stolen all zeros from the positives, but it's not positive. It's 0. It's in the middle. It's, you know, it's one of these, you know, situations where I'm neither left nor right. I'm in the middle. And as a result of that, it's possible to write down a negative number. It's certainly not minus 17. Maybe we have a Rain Man here or a Rain Woman who knows exactly what it is in 32 bits. But you can write down a number that's a legal negative number. So let's say minus 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And it's not that. It's way longer. But if I take away the minus sign, it's too big to represent. It's one bigger than a representable number. And what that means is that if I try to convert this by saying, oh, I know what minus 17 means. It means a positive number complemented. I instantaneously, as I translate it in a compiler, have to create a number that's unrepresentable in 32 bits, 16, 64 bits, whatever. And it turns out that causes more problems than you might imagine. And some languages, like ours, have decided we'll get away from that by not saying negation. We'll say this is a twiddle. And this says this is part of the number. And now you go ahead and represent that. And hopefully, in this case, you can represent this number properly without creating a positive number that's unrepresentable. That's the history of it. And it may seem silly, but there's a lot of things in computing that are as they are for silly reasons. So in our silly language, if I want to write down negative 17, I write down twiddle 17. And minus sign is used for honest to gosh subtraction. Looks a little odd at first, but after a while, it's just one of these things that you can kind of get used to. Okay, something interesting, string literals. Remember, I kind of said strings are going to be one of the more complex things, and characters are almost the same. The difference is a character is just one character long, even though it may take several characters to represent that one character, whereas a string is a sequence of as many characters as you require. So again, let's read this thing outside in. And at the very left and at the very right, we have a double quote. So that says this is what delimits it. Notice I have a whole thing in parens that has a superscript of a star. So question, am I allowed to have a null string represented by double quote followed by double quote? The answer is yes, and it's a useful thing. If I have a string variable, for example, that'd be a useful thing to assign it to. And then, of course, I could start building up by adding characters. So that's allowed. So what's in a character? What's in the string? Well, the easy characters are anything that's not unprintable. That is, printables with the exclusion of a double quote or a backslash. That means I can't have an unprintable that's not escaped. I can't have a backslash that's not escaped. I can't have a double quote that's not escaped. Question, why? Well, it's pretty easy to see why it's the case of a double quote. If I have a double quote inside the string, it's going to terminate the string prematurely. If I have a backslash that's not escaped, it's going to be misread as a prefix of an escape, and the next character is going to be read as an escape sequence. So it says the basic easy characters are everything that's printable except backslash and double quote. But how do I handle things that have backslash or double quotes? And how do I handle a subset of non-printables? Well, to keep life simple, I'm only doing a couple of them. We have backslash n. That's, of course, the back new line. That's used widely. Backslash t. That's the tab character. And I have to have a backslashable version of backslash and double quote should I want those as individual characters in my string. So that's double backslash or backslash quote. So what this thing is saying in its own way is easy characters, just write them on down. Complex ones, which are unprintables or the two special double quote or backslash, you've got to have an escape sequence for these for them to be permissible. So what that means is, if I tried to write down something like double quote / double quote. That would not be a valid string in and of itself. If you try to scan that, it probably would not scan, certainly would not scan correctly, because what would happen is I'm thinking of this as the body of the string, but it's not. My rule says you cannot have a bare / as part of the string, and you can see why. In this particular case, it's going to escape that close quote and say that's meant to be part of the text, which I don't mean. So our definition says you can't have that. You could have something like that if you want. And that would be a representation of a string that contained one character, and that one character was the double quote. So that's what this thing is trying to say, and that's why it's as complex as it seems. And you're going to have to implement that, and you're going to have to figure out how to match unprintables, or at least define unprintables, etc. And we'll get into that when we get into the tool more completely. Let's look at characters. They're pretty similar. A character is a single quote. That means a typical character might be like tick A, tick, or single quote A, single quote. And it says, what can I have inside of a single character? I can't have an unprintable, I can't have a / and I can't have a single quote. Notice I can't have a double quote because a double quote is not magic in the context of a character. Characters are single quotes, strings are double quotes. That's how I tell the two apart. And it says, okay, I can't have an unprintable, nor can I have a / or a single tick, but I can have the escape sequences, / tick, / n, / t, and double / So the same principle as strings, except in this case, I don't repeat them, so I can only have a single character, and ticks rather than double quotes are the delimiting characters. Any questions on those? Okay, other tokens are pretty easy. These are simply single or double pairs of characters. You'll typically define those just by writing them down. You may want to quote them if they're magic characters like plus or minus. You say to yourself, well, I don't know if they're magic or not. Well, protect yourself. If you're not sure, say, are you sure if double, if less than is magic or not? If you're not sure, just quote it. And then for sure it can't cause harm. So when in doubt, you know, it's like, I guess, eating mushrooms. Used to be people go on the mushrooms and do mushroom hunting. Anybody ever done that? Yeah, it's a situation. Do we have the problem here they have in Europe that some mushrooms are no-nos? Yeah, he shakes his head, yes. So, you know, doing that case, it's very important to be sure that what you pick up is a valid versus invalid mushroom. I think, but it used to be the case, what are those very famous, the truffles there used to be in Wisconsin. I don't know if there are any more of them there. And used to be able to go, not just mushroom hunting, but truffle hunting. I don't know if they're around much anymore, but anybody who's a gourmet, what's the price of truffles? Lots of dollars per ounce. Not quite as bad as caviar, but pretty expensive. So it's a situation there that, but again, I think truffles are a variation on mushrooms. I'm not that much of an expert in that area, but it's like a situation, if you're not sure if something's bad or not, avoid it. Or in this case, double quoting it on either side takes away its poisonous possibilities. We haven't talked about how to handle end the file yet. Fortunately, this is another good thing that JLEX does for us. We don't have to say, what do I do when I run out of characters? When the scanner sees it's run out of characters, it'll create one time and one time only a special token called the end the file token, which the parser will use to verify that the file is ended. The reason you need that is you might be trying to scan and parse a program that's either incomplete, just a prefix of a complete program, or maybe it's a complete program plus a little extra garbage after it, and the end the file tells you for sure where you mean the program to end. So it's everything up to and including all the characters you're able to process and scan, and then the end the file, which says there isn't any more, you're done. And it kind of forces you to be done. the single line comment. We've already done that. Let's go back to that. Remember, the single line comment is double / anything that's not an end of line, that's so that the first end of line I see terminates the comment. It can be zero or more characters matched, and then the end of line character. Now be careful here, because we had all this nonsense about unprintables and all this. This is actually an unprintable. When the user goes ahead and matches this, or you match it for the user's behalf, this is an actual honest to gosh end of line character. It's not a / n. So what's happening here, I could put / n on this, But that assumes we're using the backslash n notation in terms of our actual scanner. So what I've done here is saying, this is a way for me to write down end of line. It might be our scanner generator allows you to write that as backslash n. But be careful, because what this thing is saying here is this is the single character end of line when you represent it into the scanner generator. There's a proper way of doing that. But what's going to be matched is the actual end of line character, not a backslash n pair, which is what a user would write when they wanted to show you an end of line as part of a character. So invisible characters like ends of line and tabs are allowed in certain places, as I'll show you later. But they're in places where they really don't matter any much. And if they're visible or not is more a matter of formatting than it is content of the program. Okay, the multi-line comment, we've just been through that, the double pound sign. And finally, we have white space. And white space is filler that's put in there for human readership. What is it defined as? A blank character. This is actually the blank character, and you have to way specify that, or the tab character or the end of line character, and you can have as many of those as you want, one or more. And unlike most tokens, the white space character, white space token will be thrown away. It has no meaning to the program. It's just there for readership. So that means if you wanted to, you could have an entire program on one line with no new lines at all. It'd be totally unreadable to people, but it'd be meaningful to a computer because the end of line characters are white space that are thrown away. They're there for people readership, and that's important, but it doesn't change the meaning of a program. I should also mention that the single line comment and end of line comment are also not really tokens in the sense they are not returned. Well, if they're not returned, what happens? Well, you match them and then tell the scanner, okay, I found that. I don't want to do anything with it. Please continue scanning. So we'll see later, one of the options you have when you match a token definition is to return an actual token to the caller. An alternative is to do nothing. Say, okay, fine, you found it. Let's go on and continue scanning. And that's what you'll do for a white space, a multi-line comment, or a single-line comment. So any questions about the tokens, either what I'm defining or what they mean or why they're there? The takeaway on this is that this is a fairly reasonable programming language. If you compare this against Java, it's got much of what Java has in it, particularly when you go back and read the individual tokens near the bottom of page 2. A whole variety of those. So it is a fairly complete language. Okay, so that's the definition. The problem is how do we match these guys conveniently and safely? And it turns out that scanning is something better done not by an ordinary program of the form if this, do this, else, do that, or while something, or for something, loop or something. But it's really better done by an odd sort of specialized machine that represents just character matching in a very succinct and readable form. The problem with this is, even though it's readable, it's not readily programmable because, as you'll see, they comprise circles and arrows. And how do you type a circle and an arrow that's kind of a two-dimensional into a program? In some ways, you really should be able to. Maybe in future, you'll have something fancy enough that it'll scan it and break it up into components and actually change it into an executable program that matches what this two-dimensional definition does. We're not at that stage yet. Maybe that's something for future. And in fact, people have said, should it be the case that programs ought to be more multidimensional? Programs are really very one-dimensional now. If we could make them more multidimensional, that'd be great and something people keep talking about. So in our particular situation, we're going to have a series of states. All the state represents is a partial completion of a token match. We start out at the start state where we haven't matched anything. We finish at a final state, which says, hey, I've matched the token. And moreover, and I know what token I've matched, and that's something I can return to the user. So it'll say match this, 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 and that, and I'll give you the rules of how we match until it says this is not a valid token. If so, we'll do error handling, or yes, this is a valid token, and this is the class it belongs to. Identifier, reserve, word, literal, any and all of the possibilities we have. So the way we connect states, and I'll show you this visually in just a moment, is an arrow with one or more letters on it, or one or more characters. And this says you can go from this state to that state matching a single character. This could be a letter, a digit, a blank, an unprintable, whatever. And It is simply read, and the state of the match is advanced. We have a special state called the start state. That's a state that has an arrow coming in from nowhere. Typically, it's at the left because people read left to right, or at least I do. And a subset of states called accepting or final states. Let's look at the pictures. That's way easier. So a state is the circle. A transition is an arrow usually labeled with one or more characters. A start state is an arrow coming from nowhere. And a double circle, if I got it lined up just right, is an accepting state. So what's cool about that? What's cool about it is it represents an ideal way of matching characters, way easier than programming it. So let's go ahead and take a regular expression. And the regular expression I have is A, B, C plus, plus. Hey, I can use more than one plus. Notice this looks like a fairly complex pattern. It's what it's saying is I can match an A and a B. I can then match a C or additional C's, and I can repeat that substring match one or more times. The diagram below is a way to actually program this so that I can actually throw some character sequences at you, and you can say, yes, it works, or no, it doesn't. This definition up above, you have to say, well, how could it match this pattern? It may match it in various ways. For example, something may be matched by this plus or by that plus. The simpler definition, the one that's visual, it's as simple as can be. You just read it off, and if you reach a double circle, that means you've won the game. If you don't reach a double circle, you've lost the game, and you keep reading until you can't read anymore or until you run out of characters. Again, as simple as one might imagine. So let me write that down so I can actually trace through it. So how do I use this? Well, what I'll do is I'll throw some tokens at it and let it see what it says. So I said, hey, Mr. Scanner, is an A a valid token? It says, okay, let's try it. I'll start at the start state and see if I have an arrow labeled with A. If I don't have an arrow labeled with A, I won't go anywhere. I'll stop. And if I'm in a final state, I found a valid token. In this case, there's only one, namely the one that matches that pattern. I'll show you later how I can match multiple patterns to have a set of tokens. Ultimately, it'll be all the tokens in our language. So, okay, A doesn't work. Let's try B. Read the A, read the B. Oh, stop at a non-final state. A, B is not allowed. And you can kind of see that in this pattern, but as the pattern gets more complex, it's less readable. But this thing is always the same. Go to a state. Am I in a final state or not? Can I read anymore or not? Let's say, is A, B, D? Uh-oh, well, that's not going to work because out of B, I can't go anywhere. So ABD is certainly not going to be accepted. A and B were possible prefixes, but when I get to a D, I'm dead meat because in this case, I'm stuck at this state here and there's no way ever to get past it because the D doesn't go anywhere and it's blocking all the remaining characters. So that doesn't work. Well, let's get one that does. Let's try ABC. There's an A, there's a B, there's a C. Says that works. Hey, cool. How about A, B, C, C? A, B, C. I get to the final state and I can loop on that. That says I can accept extra C's if you care to give them to me. So A, B, C, C is fine. Let's try another A. That'll loop me back to there, but that's not a final state. So A, B, C, C, A is not. You can see what happened. I matched one time. I've partially matched a second time, but I've not completed it yet. Let's try a B. And a C. So A goes there, B goes there, C, loop, A, B, C. Yeah, hey, that's accepted. So the mechanism, no matter how complex the token is, you may have more states and more arrows, but it's always, always very simple, namely, go to a state, read a character if you can, keep reading until you can't read a character or you run out of characters, which of course means you can't read a character. If you're in a final state, you found a valid token. If you are not, you don't. And you keep reading as long as you can to have the longest possible match. Well, this is sort of not a very motivated one because it doesn't look like anything real. So let's skip ahead a little bit to this guy. And I'll go back then and we'll cover what we missed. So this is a valid one. And this part here will get how do we actually program it. But let's look at this automaton. I've numbered the states. That's fine. That makes it easier to reference. It says, what sort of tokens are valid as single line comments? Still more white paper. Cool. So it says, is a single slash valid? Notice this is just for single line comments. It will be valid as an operator, but we haven't included that yet. So I go from state one to state two and says, nope, that's not a double circle. That's not good. So how about a double slash? Is that valid? And the answer is no, it's not, because I have to have that end of line to terminate. So if I have an end of line, that's that invisible end of line character, that's part of the input, it says, yeah, I'll go from 3 to 4, and that's a double circle. And moreover, I can't read any more characters, so I am done. There's no way to get out of state 4, so this is a complete token, stop. That makes sure that I don't read more characters than I intended to and read something as a comment that shouldn't have been a comment. Alternatively, I can read, as you can see, any text not containing an end of line, because anything that's not an end of line cycles on state 3. The end of line goes to state 4 and terminates the process. So reading this sort of simple token is very easy if I had some sort of way to visualize this machine. I have to have some way to implement it, and that's something I'll get to in a little bit. So these automata are cool, but there's one thing that I require, and it's going to turn out I can always have this if I want it. And that is, if I have an automaton that has multiple arrows under the same character, I'm in trouble because that's going to look confusing. Why would I possibly get that? Well, suppose I had something like IF as a reserved word, and in fact you do, and I had INT for integer as a reserved word, and you do. Let's write down an automaton for it. I'll first write down one that's confusing, and then we'll fix it. This is a super-duper automaton that accepts not just one, but two tokens, so two for the price of one. I could write this down. This is an automaton, but it's not in the shape I want because it has two transitions under I. This is something called non-deterministic. It means that, in some sense, you can't in advance predict which path it's going to take. Oh, that's bad. I don't like programming things where I don't know what the program is going to do, because it may do the wrong thing, and then the quality assurance guy finds it, and all of a sudden, I look like the fool, and I don't want that. But it turns out in automata, there's a way to change this not-so-good automaton to an automaton that's deterministic, but does the same job. That's not anything that's all that obvious, but it is doable. And because it's doable, these scanners become much more reliable than you might fear. Can anybody just guessing how I could rewrite this thing to get rid of this problem that I don't know whether to take the upper path or the bottom path when I see an I? That's right. What I'll do is I'll create a composite state that says when I see an I don't know whether it's an if or an int yet, but I don't have to, because in this particular case, it's not a complete token. So it's only when the token differentiates itself that I have alternative paths. So the bottom guy is fine. In this case, it says read an I, not sure yet. Read an if, oh yeah, fine, you're done. That's a reserved word if. Read an N, we're on a path that's got to be an int if it's a reserved word. You give me a T, it's fine. Give me a non-T, I'd have to give you an error message because these guys do not contain identifiers. I'll show you how to handle identifiers later, but they're not included yet. But this is the way it works. So it turns out as long as the automata always have a unique transition for a given character, it's easy to program. In fact, so easy to program, I'll show you how a system like JLEX or LEX actually does it. So the way we'll do that is this sort of situation, and I'll go back to the thing that's numbered here, is not representable easily because how do I, in a program written in Java or C or C++, talk about circles and arrows and single circles and double circles? It's not in its vocabulary. But what I can do is, of course, number things. And computers just love numbers. And what I can do is I can create all these arrows as a table that says, maybe I have an arrow, maybe I don't. A blank entry will say, I don't have an arrow. Number will say, I do have an arrow. And if I have an arrow, that'll show the target. So this transition table represents this particular automaton. It's got four states, and I numbered them. So I have four rows with numbers in them. Each row has as many columns as I have characters. Say, oh my gosh, there's 128 characters. That's terrible. I have 128 times four. What is that? That's 500. I'm going to take 500 bytes out of a machine that has how many gigabytes? So in the old days, they worried about it. These days, it's not big enough to worry about. There are ways to compress tables, but life's too short, so we're not going to do that. So what it does is, it says, if I have a transition in this diagram up above, under a given character, the vertical column will say, here's the character, and that'll say where you go. So this guy says, if I in state one, I see a slash, go to state two. If I'm in state two and see a slash, go to state three. If I'm in state three, see a slash, stay in state three. If I'm in state four and see a slash, can't read it, don't go anywhere. And that handles for all the characters. Notice that some of these characters are almost identical, and there are ways to share columns if I want to. I'm not going to worry about that, but it's doable. And finally, I have a separate table, a vector. It says, of all the states, here are the reserved words. I'm sorry, here are the final states. And in this case, it'd be only four. So if I want to read something like slash slash A, end of line, we'll have to program this, but let's do it. It would say, okay, I'm in state one, see a slash, take it to state two, C and A. I'm sorry, take it to state three for the second slash. C and A, stay in state three. C and end of line, go to state four. Check my table. State four has no transition, so I can't keep reading, but it is a final state. So it says, yeah, you got a winner. And the cool thing about this is real easy to program. I mean, what is it? It's a table of integers. Computers love integers. They're indexed by characters, which can be considered to be integers using their character code, and state numbers, which are numbers. So all of a sudden, I have a two-dimensional table indexed by numbers, integers, small integers. Standard operating fare, easiest thing in the world to do. And in fact, there are two ways of doing it. One way is a way that will interpret the table. And another way, and I'll talk about this label, is actually change the table back into executable code. So remember, we want something, and I'll go back temporarily, that effectively implements this, but implements it either through a table, as I showed you, or through executable code that represents ifs and so on. The trouble with ifs is if we have to program, they're nasty. But if somebody else programs them and does it automatically, we can probably live with it. So it's like any other dirty work. Now, if somebody else is doing the dirty work, go and do it. So when I was driving in, the road clearing crew was out there and some guy was shoveling and all that. And says, he's going to shovel the snow and I'm going to come here and shovel something else. But so we all do our own jobs. And I hope he's happy with his because I'm happy with mine. I'd rather be shoveling what I am now than shoveling snow. So here's a way that you could actually program this little automaton into actual code. The good thing about this is that it's readable code to humans. The bad thing about it is it's not easily maintainable because if I add another reserved word besides int and if I add in or integer or something else, this code would have to be changed in non-obvious ways. So the other form, the one that has tables, is more flexible. But let's see what this thing is going to do. So I could actually code this up. This is Java or C or anything else. It's pretty conventional. It says I'm going to have a variable called state. That's just an integer. It says I'm in state 1, 2, 3, or 4, you know, whichever. So it says here. Oh, I'm sorry. I got the wrong order here. Sorry. This is the one that actually does it reading character by character. So it says I'll have a variable called current character. That represents the character I'm processing right now but haven't fully scanned. So initially it'll be one slash and then another slash, then an AA, then an end of line character. So it says, is the current character slash? Well, if it is, I'm going to read another character. And no, this thing now is doing the low-level stuff that I don't want to do, namely reading and buffering and all that. So it's read current character. That means current character changes. It's done an I/O operation from a file system. Or maybe it had a buffer and fetched something out of a buffer. So let's read another character and say, is this new current character also a slash? The answer is yes, it is. So now I go into repeat. And it says, repeat, read a character, and keep reading it until I hit an end of line or an end of file. And I have end of file in here because remember I warned you that if I have a comment at the end of a program that is not terminated with end of line and I try to read past end of file, that's bad. Anybody who's done any number of programming, reading past end of file is a fatal error. That's the sort of thing about programs. They don't always fail gracefully. They kind of just go out, take you in a hall and shoot you. You're dead. Go by. And it happens at the worst time sometimes. So in this case, otherwise, signal lexical error. So that's a little tag to say, here, do some error processing. And finally, if my current character was an end of line, that's what it should have been, then I have a valid token. I processed a valid token. Otherwise, I have an invalid token because it did not end with an end of line. So I could have generated this code. But since people aren't generally going to read this, they just want the thing to write and do its thing. Don't bother me if you're working properly. What I can do instead is have this code. And what's cool about this code is it's independent for the most part of what's in the table. I can create a bigger scanner with more characters, more states, different numberings. It doesn't matter. It simply means that if I make a bigger scanner, this table will change. It'll probably have the same width because that's determined by the character set. But instead of having four states, it might have 10 or 20 or 50. And instead of having one final state, it might have two or three or as many as I want. But that's just information in the table that the computer can easily change. My driver, this thing, and again, the one in your actual scanner is going to be a tad more complex. You can actually go and look at it when you're building your scanner and see what it's worrying about. But you can take it for granted. This thing is expected to work properly. You don't need to maintain it. So in this particular case, it says our state will be the start state. And now we're going to have a while true. Oh, wait a minute. That's an infinite loop. Why is that valid? Why do I have a while loop here, while true? Which seems to suggest a while loop will never terminate. What's going on? I got a break in there. So that's a form to say, I don't know how many times I'm going to run, so keep running until something forces a termination. So it's perfectly valid programming. Notice that means also when you're building a scanner, building a compiler, if you ever see a while true in a program, it's not automatically wrong. Oftentimes, it's the case you say, well, an infinite loop is a bad thing, and many times it is, but in the context of what we're doing, it may be that somebody has a way of breaking out. They could do a break. A continue doesn't do you a lot of good, or they could even do a return and get you out of the subprogram back to the caller. So we're going to be allowing that. So it says here we have this variable current character. Starts out as a slash, and it says, are you equal to an end the file? In this particular case, I'm going to break, and that means I can't read anymore. Remember, I can't read past the end the file. So if you're an end the file, then I'm going to say, are you a valid token? In this case, you're not. Because you're not in an accepting state, so I print an error message saying terminated with invalid token. Otherwise, I look up in my table, it says, here's my current state, it starts out with the start state, and the current character, and that either takes me to a blank entry, which is my representation of an error entry, or a number, which is a valid state. So it says, are you an error? That is, are you a blank entry? Well, then in this case, I'll break. If you're currently in an accepting state, you have a valid token. Otherwise, you don't, and I do an error processing. Otherwise, I simply update the state to be the next state. I looked at the table and say, where do I go to next? I read another character, and I loop back. So the actual driver is remarkably simple, and it's a way for a computer using code we're familiar with to implement these arrows and circle implementation, arrow and circle notation in a way that's reliable and efficient. So that's essentially what our system's going to end up doing. Let's look at a few more examples. And the idea here is that every regular expression has an automaton. In some cases, the expression is easier. In other cases, the automaton is easier. The way our system will work is it'll take the expression, convert it into the equivalent of the automaton, but then represent it internally as tables so that a driver can actually implement those tables, execute those tables, and get a valid scan. So what's this one here? This is what I promised you maybe an hour ago, whatever it is, about having a fixed decimal that allows digits on one side or both side of a decimal point, but not a decimal point itself. And I saved this for a reason, and let me get another blank piece of paper. And that's the case that surprisingly, or maybe not surprisingly, it's sometimes the case that the automaton is an easier way to read and understand what's going on than the expression which generated it. So you can run one or the other. There's a theorem that says I can always go from a regular expression to an automaton. There's another theory, which I won't get into, but I can point you to, that says I can always take an automaton and go back to a regular expression that defines it. So it's a matter of one translation or another. You know, you can read your Shakespeare in English or non-English, depending on what you want, or read your Proust or whatever, you know, your thing is, whatever your favorite author is. So let's go ahead and look at the diagram. I think that's easier. So the idea is I want to allow a number like 12.34. I want to allow something without a decimal point, like 1234. I'll allow 0.34. I'll allow 12 point, but I won't allow an exposed decimal point. And what I want to do is visualize on this that that's doing that. And somebody gave it to me, all I say, okay, do you work as I expected? So let's go ahead and try each of these. D is a digit, so I can read a digit, cycle in a digit. Oh, sorry, I'm pointing in and it's not being there, sorry. So I read a digit, get there, read a second digit, stay in the bottom center, read a decimal point, that gets me up to the right there, read the 3 and the 4, and that's a double circle, so it says, yeah, this is okay. I can read a digit, stay here, read 2, read 3, read 4, that's the final state, so that's okay. I can read a decimal point up here. Notice a bare decimal point is not allowed. That's not a final state. So this thing is okay. It's disallowed. I can read a 0.3, go here, and then a 4. So yeah, it accepts that. And going back, I can read a 1-2 point, which takes me there and stop, and that's allowed. So the automaton works just by trying all the examples and seeing it works. The thing is, up here, this is way less readable, and I didn't go out of my way to make it unreadable. It's sometimes the situation is such that, to be precise, you have to be a little more complex. Remember earlier I tried D star dot D star, and that was not so good. So that was the situation. Let me see how much time I have on this, too. Yeah, just enough time to finish on this, and then we'll take our second break and be gone. So what this thing says is, this is almost what I had before, but notice I have a D plus here. So this situation here will not accept a bare decimal point on the right because it says I got to have a digit on the right. This thing says I have to have a digit on the left, and I can then have a decimal point or not. So I can do an integer or not. And if I want to do digits on both sides, this thing on the right will say, yes, that'll do one or more digits, and that'll do one or more digits. So this thing does work, but it's, I think, less readable. And because it's less readable, it's an example of where, in this particular case, the automaton is better. Another complex one, but this one won't be doable in a couple of minutes, so we're just a little bit past quarter of. So why don't we take a break, be back about 8 o'clock, and we'll do one final session, and then get you out of here about 8:30.